Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello and welcome to the Game Podcast from The Times. I'm Natalie Sawyer. The Women's World Cup in France is almost upon us. 24 teams competing in 52 matches in 9 cities over the course of 1 month, all for the most prestigious prize in women's football. We'll be coming to you every Monday and Thursday during the tournament. Today, we'll be looking ahead to the most high-profile Women's World Cup of all time. Alongside me in the studio today, women's football reporter for The Times, Molly Hudson, writer for the Sunday Times and the Sunday Times Sport, it is Rebecca Myers. The Times chief sports writer Matt Dickinson is here, and we're also joined by the former England and Chelsea star Claire Rafferty. And Claire, let me just start with you. You recently announced your retirement from football. How hard a decision was that to make?
Yeah, I mean, it's not something that I decided overnight. It's been probably a 6 to 7 month process. Leaving Chelsea for me was quite emotional, so it's been difficult to kind of refocus, but I've had a fantastic year at West Ham, and I'm 30 now. I've had 3 ACLs and a lot of injuries on top of that. So my body finally kind of said, you know, enough's enough. And for me, I always wanted to be playing at the top level. And as soon as I feel like I'm not able to do that, I wasn't really willing to take a step down. So I think the right time for me, and I'm really excited for the next stage.
Yeah, and that certainly is our game, that is for sure. Now, later on, we're looking at the contenders for the trophy, the players we should be excited about, and the potential impact of the tournament as a whole. Let's start with England then, managed by Phil Neville, who took over in January 2018. He is a prominent figure within the men's game. Matt, how much do you think this appointment has raised the profile of the women's game?
I think in this country it's raised it a lot. I'm an admirer of Phil Neville's for a very long time, known him since he was sort of young coming through at United. Incredibly diligent guy, which is why, you know, I can understand asking the question about him coming from outside the women's game, asking was that appropriate. But if you're going to take that as a criteria, you're going to be ruling out an awful lot of talented people. So I think I always knew that he would throw himself at the job as wholeheartedly as he would anything. That's his nature. I think we've seen that. I think we've seen potentially the beginnings of a successful management career. He certainly ticks a lot of boxes. We're still learning about him on the job, but I think the FA also sees someone who potentially suits international football, which is a different sort of rhythm and different attributes required. And as I said, I think, you know, with his profile coming in, you know, it's made a lot of people sit up. And that's, you know, that's not reason in itself to give him the job. But at a time when we are all looking forward to a World Cup, we're looking forward to hopefully a successful England team. And I think to the growth of the women's game, I think he's got a big role potentially to play in that.
Molly, is there a real sense within this group that they can go all the way?
I think there definitely is, particularly with Phil's impact on the squad since he's come in. He's been very clear in lots of media that he's done that actually, yes, that is the aim. The aim is to lift the World Cup. And I think that's something that perhaps in English football in general we've been a little bit afraid of saying at times. And particularly for this women's team, as the league has now become professional this season as well, the players are training at a higher level. They're coming up against players of a higher level. And I think that's definitely improving and reflecting on the England internationals. I think the She Believes Cup victory definitely played a part in that. It was a victory against some of the best teams in the world. Now, we can look at that one of two ways. You can say, yes, it was a win and we beat what was up against us. But at the same time, you know, the teams there probably aren't the teams that we will face in the World Cup. They'll be very different personnel. But certainly Phil has brought in that winning mentality that he had as a player. And I think a lot of these players now, they're at a time in their career where they're really ready to go and build on that bronze medal from 2015.
If they do go all the way, of course, it will be the captain, Steph Horton, that lifts the trophy. Someone who has had to show remarkable character in her personal life with her husband suffering from a debilitating illness. Rebecca, talk to us about the power of a role model like Horton.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, it's incredible, really, that she's coming at all. I mean, her husband was only diagnosed with motor neurone disease back in autumn last year. That's a disease that has a life expectancy of as little as sort of 3 years. So at the time, Phil did say, you know, you take a step back if you need, do what you need to do. You know, your family comes first. And there was no guarantee that she would have turned around and said, I want to continue. But she did. And that's really the greatest testament there could be to her character and to her strength. I think also, you know, I'm sure her husband would want her to be there. He's come to all the games. I'm sure he'll come along and cheer her on. But there really isn't sort of greater inspiration than that, especially for people watching back home, to see someone who's gone through all of that and come out and played so brilliantly. She's led the squad through so much. She was there through all the Samson stuff. She's seen this squad kind of through thick and thin, and they look to her now. And I think that this will be her time to shine, really.
Claire, you know this squad well. You've played with and against these England players. Tell us about the talent then that this squad offers, and particularly up in the attack section of that squad.
Yeah, well, just touching on Steph as well, like, knowing her personally, she is the most level-headed person and the most obvious leader, even from first meeting of her, that you'll ever come across. And I think that showed in how she's dealt with the situation. And I think sometimes when you go through something such emotionally as difficult as that, you really kind of then get the opportunity to channel your frustrations in different ways. And this World Cup is actually a fantastic opportunity for her to be normal for her in her eyes. But going back to the attacking front, I mean, it's quite scary, isn't it? Nikita Paris just announced she's leaving City, which is a big loss for them. Obviously, Georgia Stanway, what a talent coming through. Unfortunately, scored against us in the FA Cup final, which I'm not going to go on about too much. And then, you know, you've got the likes of Jodie Taylor, Ellen White, who've got bundles of experience, Tony Duggan. I mean, obviously, Jodie Taylor had such a fantastic tournament in 2015, and then to go on and win the Golden Boot in the Euros 2 years after. She really is kind of a big tournament player. Same with Ellen White. The goals they've scored, I remember on you know, me and Ellen have had the same kind of journey. We had our debuts together, and we've been in every single squad together. And I will always remember Ellen in 2011 coming on and scoring in Germany 2011 World Cup. And since then, she's kind of really made a name for herself. And I know a lot of people kind of go, what does she bring? But that's what she brings. She brings big goals and big tournaments, and the obvious likes of Nikita and Georgia Stanway, that, you know, their ability to beat players and their kind of unpredictability really is going to be a key attribute moving forward for us.
Let's talk a little bit about Nikita Paris then, who is the player of the year in England with Manchester City. She is off to France, as you say. She's joining up at Lyon, the very successful Lyon team. You mentioned Tony Duggan there as well. She's at Barcelona. Rebecca, is Nikita the next European superstar, would you say?
I definitely think so, yeah. If I had to put my money on anyone, it would be Nikita. I mean, she's just shone at Manchester City. She's so young, but she's such a character as well. She's such a brilliant spark. Like, she walks into a room, she lights it up. She's great on social media. I think the Europeans are going to love her accent. She's so cheeky. I think she's just, she's, you know, the footballer for now. Young girls love her. And she's, you know, she's got great values. She does quite a lot of sort of charity work, stuff like that. And I think she's going to be... you know, she's going to thrive over there in Lyon, where there's such massive crowds. I think she's just going to, absolutely
it's
thrive.
It's a shame to lose her from the English league, isn't it, really?
Yeah, but, it's gutting.
They obviously pay a bit more than they do here.
Yeah. She was super impressive at the FWA Awards night, up on the stage with Raheem Sterling, and she was every bit as much of the star of the show as he was. Mm-hmm. Came on, spoke really well, as you say, really sort of bright spark. Looking forward to seeing
characters
more of
it. Like that, really important to squads.
Well, absolutely, because I think, you know, coming as someone who spends, you know, 99% of their time in the men's game, but it's what Gareth Southgate, I think, did brilliantly was tell his players to tell their stories. And I think that's what the women's game, you know, to educate, you know, a lot of us that still need educating and to learn about the players and you know the struggles they've been through. I mean, you know, Gareth Southgate told all his players to start. You know, they're seen as overpaid and spoiled, and he was like, no, you guys have to get to this level. You've come through a lot. Well, imagine if that, you know, on the women's side, imagine how much they've had to go through. Probably, you know, had to come from you know, neglected clubs and. You know, a lot less opportunities. So I think, you know, I'm really looking forward to some of the women like Nikita telling their stories.
Mm. Well, England will face Argentina, Japan and Scotland in their group. And of course, it's even more of a landmark for Scotland, qualifying for the first time ever. This is Shelley Kerr, the former Scotland international who's in charge. What do we know about Scotland, Molly?
We know that I think, for me, they could be a dark horse. And I think if you look at our group on paper, you take England and Japan and you say they're the two teams that are going forward. But I actually think that the Scotland game could be as difficult or more difficult than the Japan game because, yes, we know what Japan offer and their possession-based football. And you know that they're very good at that and they've got the experience on the world stage. But Scotland almost have that air of mystery about them. It's their first tournament, first major tournament. And I think it's you know, we know they struggled in the Euros. They had some players out and I think the Lionesses beat them 6-0. And that's certainly not going to be the case this time around. Mm. I think, you know, we've seen the likes of Erin Cuthbert, Caroline Weir, those sort of players, they're really thriving in the Women's Super League. And I think our English domestic game is actually really impacting on the Scottish team, and we also saw the Welsh team in the qualifying. It's really making an impact now that they're playing in a professional league and they're playing up against professional players, and that's really making a difference. And I think Scotland have definitely taken the team to heart. I think they've had, you know, they've had the men's teams that haven't done so well in recent years, and I think, you know, it's really nice that I know the First Minister Nicola Sturgeon went to the trophy tour. And I think, you know, they'll have the whole country behind them. And I think that's really important for them as players on such a big occasion.
And Claire, you were nodding away about Scotland being a dark horse.
Yeah, totally. And when you're an underdog like Scotland are, the pressure's off and results are, you know, you can't predict what's going to happen. I think we felt a bit like that in the last World Cup. No one really expected us to be as successful as we were, and that went in our favour. So I wouldn't be surprised to see some upsets caused by Scotland.
Looking at the rest of the runners and riders then, Claire, let's ask you, which players are you most excited about seeing? The players, perhaps, that could light up this tournament?
Yeah, I mean, where do I start? Sam Kerr has been outstanding in the American League. I think she's a top goal scorer in the American League and the Australian League. So she's a strike force that we want to try and avoid. Equally, Medema for Arsenal has been fantastic this season.
And she plays the Netherlands.
Yeah, she's a Dutch player. I mean, the whole Dutch team, you know, having won the Euros, will be taking great confidence from that. I know they've had a bit of a difficult qualifying run, but, you know, the experience you get from being a winner and that change in mentality really will kind of push them on.
Matt Marta is a name very familiar to those who perhaps don't follow the women's game still, but she really is an icon for the sport.
Yeah, I think, I mean, she's one name that everyone knows, that's for sure. I mean, I think she's 33 now, obviously sort of approaching the twilight. I think this would be a fifth World Cup, but she's got record goal scorer in World Cups. I mean, I think, yeah, the women's game, again, will thrive with iconic players from whatever country they come from, and she certainly qualifies.
I think also on Marta, as Matt said, this could well, let's infer, be her final World Cup. And to look at what she's seen in the span of the World Cup she's attended, and how, I mean, we know that she's pretty much, you know, still the best paid player in the world, but she's had to endure an awful lot of different atmospheres, far less funding, far less crowds previously. So I'd almost love to hear her reflections after this World Cup on how that has all changed. I mean, I would have loved to see Ada Hegerberg. She announced a couple of years ago that she was not going to take part in the Norwegian national team, despite being pretty much their star player, because she had issues with the way they were supported and funded and all of that. And it's a shame because this would have been a great opportunity for her to showcase her talents to fans who only know her from the twerking comments. She's an incredible footballer. She plays for Leon superbly, and it's a shame that we can't see that skill on the pitch.
But equally, there's so many other talents coming through. You know, Ji So-young of Korea. You know, you've got Maren Mjelde of Norway. Every single team has, you know, at least two or three star players. Randy Renard of France, Marazan of Germany. So it's really difficult to call who is going in as favourites, as obviously USA are the standout favourites, having won the last World Cup, but England definitely have a good shout in my eyes, for sure.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Off Air, the podcast. With Jane Garvey and Fee Glover.
I go to the sink and I have some cheese.
You eat cheese in the sink?
Doesn't everybody?
Every Monday to Thursday, Jane and Fee keep the microphones on after their Times radio show.
I think if we were to do a Mr. and Mrs.
Oh, no.
How would that go in the booth?
Badly. It would go very badly.
Unencumbered and off air.
Two tiny women with gobs.
Off Air, the podcast. Now available on the Times radio app.
So you mentioned that USA, the holders, one of the main contenders, then took to win it. Molly, who else can we back, perhaps?
I honestly would echo what Claire's just said. I genuinely think it's wide open because I think, particularly touching on the She Believes Cup again, we saw that, yes, England won it, but there were certainly flaws there. That there's things that still need to be decided, particularly in the friendlies. We've seen sort of like Lucy Bronze. It's been a bit experimental from Phil, whether he plays her in midfield or right back, where, you know, he's already said she's the best in the world. So I guess if it's not broken, why try and fix it? But that's certainly something that's still up for discussion, and perhaps we'll see that in the two more friendlies that we still have to come. I think the likes of the US and Japan perhaps didn't take that tournament as seriously as we did, and I think that's certainly, if you take that as how it's going to be in the World Cup, then that's definitely a false impression. You know, US, the holders, we know the kind of quality they bring. Yes, some of their star players now are ageing, but I think, you know, the strength and depth of a country like the US is far superior to what we have at the moment. But, you know, I also think, you know, we talk about the Netherlands and how good they are. I know the pressure, there's quite a lot of pressure in the Netherlands, almost because they won the Euros, they've, like, they go to a training session and it's sold out just to watch them train. Mm. And for women's footballers, particularly, like for me, Demar, I was speaking to her earlier on the season, and it's almost like they've jumped ahead and they're kind of trying to catch up to that now and trying to live up to those expectations. And then obviously France, the hosts, for me, I think that if I had to pick a team, I'd probably go for France. Just the feeling of hosts, you know, we've seen how good domestically a lot of those players are with Lyon. And they've got a lot of experience mixed with young talent in that team that can, you know, on their day, I genuinely think they could beat anyone in the world.
But for me, France always kind of fail at the last hurdle. But I don't think they've got past the semi-final in the World Cup. And they've always had such fantastic talent, and their domestic league's always been so, so strong. But for some reason, that mentality has always let them down. I know the last World Cup, they were expected to go on and do better than us, and they didn't, because I think the only difference for me is mentality. And this year, the pressure is on them. It's can they emulate what the men did? And I hope they don't, because I want England to win. But I mean, they should be doing so.
They should be doing a lot better then. Now, of course, anyone who's read your work, Matt, or listened to him on the Game podcast before, you will know that Matt is a big supporter of VAR, and this will be the first ever Women's World Cup with VAR. Is that, Matt, another example of the raised profile of the game then?
Well, I think it's a necessary way of treating the same. I mean, it was obviously introduced at the 2018 Men's World Cup, and I think with, you know, one or two glitches aside, over a couple of handballs, decisions which are, that seems to be the big VAR grey area, I thought with great success. You know, there was an awful lot of sort of doom-mongering before about it would ruin this and ruin that. I mean, yeah, and look at this season in Europe. You know, the fact is Man City would be in the Champions League final, was it not for a VAR decision that corrected a wrong offside. So, yeah, we're seeing it used rightly in my mind in big games, and I think, yeah, it's absolutely vital that the women's tournament is treated the same as the men's, you know, and hopefully that is changing. I mean, the fact that they made the women play on synthetic pitches, I mean, you know, I think there's no way they would have done that to the men's tournament, and this is a sort of very simple common sense way of treating them both as equals, which is only right.
I think we all hope that VAR isn't a talking point in the tournament, because obviously looking at it from another perspective, obviously Bibiana Steinhaus is the only referee that has actually used VAR in a professional league and in proper games. And I think, you know, it is a risk because, yes, of course, as Matt said, it clears up some of those decisions that you look back on and you think, you know, that's made a massive impact, and easily with VAR it's found. But at the same time, these referees have kind of, I think the most they've done is worked in youth tournaments with VAR. Mm. So it's whether they can take that step up with the pressure, with the crowds, which, you know, not only will the players not have been used to, but these officials won't have been used to either. So I think what we can all hope for is that it runs really smoothly, VAR does its job, but it isn't taking the main stage. It's
the big talking point.
Have the focus on them.
Yeah. I mean, of course, VAR does add drama for people watching at home, Rebecca. So for those watching, they may well enjoy the fact that VAR is there.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, what's better than watching at home on the TV and having a bit of a kind of row about whether you think something's gonna play out the way you hoped or thought it looked from your eyes. I think it will add drama. I think it's helped massively that it's had a bit of time to warm up, that the fans have had a bit of time to adjust to it. But I would completely echo Matt. Equality, you don't get just good things. You get good and bad with equality, and we've got to have everything. And I think you can't have a Women's World Cup without it when the men have got it. It's so important. But, you know, on the flip side, like Molly said, it may well expose some sort of teething pains in refereeing, in officials that we know the women's game has. The best we can hope for really is that it's a non-story and it's just a good extra for the people at home.
Claire, what's your feelings on VAR as a former player?
Yeah, I mean, I think... Oh, former. Ouch. hasn't hit yet.
Sorry.
I think when the... You know, the cost of winning and losing is so high, you need to reduce human error as much as possible. So I really am a big fan of it. I would have loved to have it in the 2015 World Cup when we played Japan. I don't know, I've ranted about this so many times. There was a penalty given against me for a foul that was outside the box. And I only got this because I got sent pictures of the freeze frame of it. So I know it was outside the box. But if we had VAR then we would have won the game because it would have been, am I right to say? Maybe, no, we would have drawn the game and it would have been different. We would have gone further into... But it's a big deal. Momentum shifted in their favour. Luckily, Farrah Williams went on and scored a penalty to save my blushes. So, but I'm a big fan of it. Obviously, teething problems with referees is a standard good enough in the first place anyway. This extra pressure of them dealing with it. I just hope that, as Rebecca and Molly and Matt said, it's not the talking point of the tournament.
Hmm. Well, let's talk about the potential impact of this tournament on the wider public. Molly, as someone that covers the WSL week in, week out, and you've seen the growth of the game, how excited are you about this summer?
I'm so excited. It is literally going to be the biggest, hopefully best World Cup. And hopefully that translates England winning and that massively translates into the leagues. But I think, if nothing else, it's massively helped the teams that have qualified. You take Argentina, that are probably going to hopefully lose every game in our group. They are the minnows, but just for them, the Argentinian FA have now said they're going to pay them for being in the tournament. They've also secured a domestic league, a professional domestic league. So purely for qualifying for some of these countries, you know, your Thailands, yes, it may feel as though there's a bigger gap between the elite and the minnows in the actual tournament. And yes, perhaps we shall see some big scorelines. But certainly for all of these teams, it's such a massive thing for the game to have this World Cup, to have it on TV, particularly with it being on free-to-air TV. That makes a big difference to the people that can just switch their TV on and watch it, and especially the younger generation. That, you know, your people like Steph Horton, Nikita Paris, they really can be the role models for the next generation. And hopefully they are lucky enough now to have the grassroots plans in place for these young children to watch these games and be inspired. And then there's now the pathway to go on and achieve that and to get involved at grassroots. And I think we've been saying it a lot that there's a tipping point in the women's game. This is going to be the moment. And I know Phil Neville's very keen for that to be the moment, and his influence has definitely helped that. But yeah, you just have to hope England have a good World Cup. And I think if we do, that's it. That's the tipping point. But you just hope that if we don't do so well and perhaps Phil leaves, you hope that it doesn't, you know, simmer down again. And you just have to really build on that momentum. And I know that's something that FA are really keen to do, to capitalise on all of this media attention.
Mm. And how is this tournament in France being received in terms of attendances and the France nationals? How much are they all looking forward to this summer?
I think it's a good combination because, you know, some of us have recently spent some time there for the Women's Champions League. and they love football. France loves football. And they've really taken women's football in particular to their heart. I know there was some controversy with the Paris Saint-Germain ultras, but the actual Paris Saint-Germain fans were amazing. It was the most incredible atmosphere I've ever experienced at a women's game. And I think, you know, Lyon, that was, I think it was nearly 23,000 fans watched the semi-final with Chelsea. And that was the highest attendance that they've had bar a final in the Champions League. So I think if you were ever going to pick a country to have other than England, which is really growing with the game, it would be France. You know, it's easy to get to. We talk about, you know, the men's game and the Europa Leagues and all of that, the struggle to get to places. You know, this is France and this is their big cities and their big stadiums. And they've really, you know, the Stade de Nice where England play against Scotland and Japan, you know, that held games at Euro 2016. So they're ready now. They're ready for the fans and ready to grow the game. And hopefully that'll really improve the attendances for the tournament.
Rebecca, an exciting World Cup, an exciting England team. What effect can this all have on young girls then growing up watching this tournament?
I said this the other day to a friend, and I say it with some trepidation, but I do think like this could change everything. And you sort of say that and you go, oh God, I can't believe I just said that. But I, you know, this is the first time that young girls watching it know they can be paid to be a footballer. They know that that is, and not paid as in, you know, 100 quid here or there and you've got to work three other jobs. Paid full-time, properly, decent wages. I think it's also coming at a time, we know the FA has been putting in quite a lot of infrastructure for clubs so that a young girl, if she watches the World Cup on TV, can find a local club and actually go to it, a local club that even 5 years ago wouldn't have been there. She would have had to play for the boys' team. Hopefully that will start to become less and less common. And it's also, you know, we're in a moment, I think, for women's sport in general. There's an atmosphere. We've got the Netball World Cup straight afterwards. And also just things like This Girl Can adverts and changes in how girls are viewed as having a sporting interest. And all of that hopefully should kind of compound. And these young girls can sit and watch TV and say, I want to do that, and not be called a tomboy or not be called a boy or not be ridiculed for wanting to do something like that.
Obviously, we've touched on the fact that we want equality in both the men's and women's game. But you did write recently about the issue of sexist sports kits maybe driving young girls away from the sport. What happened? What was that all about?
Yeah, so this actually had great reaction from this piece. Quite a lot of athletes and players tweeting and getting in touch about it. But I wrote about how kit affects everyone from a young girl just literally playing in their PE kit all the way through to a player who can't get kit that fits or kit made for women at all. You know, this is a huge problem, particularly in football, actually more so than a lot of sports. Adidas only bought out a women's football boot in, I think, 2016. It's not something that's been around for long. Lots of players play in men's boots or children's boots if you're a woman with small feet. Lots of girls will turn up to a local sports store and be told that they only stock boys' boots. And that's before you get into really basic things like, are your PE kit shorts too tight? Do they make you feel uncomfortable or exposed or fat or whatever it is? Anything like that is an obstacle. And we're finding girls are dropping out of PE, dropping out of sport, increasingly younger and younger and in more and more numbers. And just basic things like this can be so easily avoided. Nike have sort of put out these fantastic kits for this tournament. But this is the first tournament that women have had different kits to men. That's absurd. I think we sometimes forget to take a step back and realise quite how slow this progress has been. And it's not just about keeping girls in the game, it's making sure they're safe when they play. And a man's football boot is not safe for a woman to play in.
Particularly, I'm sure, with Claire is more than sadly familiar with this.
Especially, you know, with ACL saying, hey, injuries. On top of playing on a 3G pitch in the last World Cup, 5 consecutive games on a 3G, absolutely tore my knees to bits, and in the end I actually couldn't even play that last game against Germany because of it. So small details, even down to, you know, you're saying about the shorts, the shape of the shorts. We have hips and we have bums and we have thighs, which some men don't have. And they, you know, they're made in a different way. The Nike shorts are made in a different way, and I can't tell you how much difference it makes just to be able to feel comfortable and be able to move properly in the shorts. And you know, it's stuff that we wear every single day. So, you know, you wouldn't wear a man's shirt to work if you didn't have to. Yeah. So why do we have to wear men's training kit to work if we don't have to?
Yeah, I mean, like you say, progress is being made, but slow progress considering it's only just happening. But certainly, as we say, looking forward to this World Cup, there is change taking place, and this World Cup will be broadcast on terrestrial television. Matt, it's fair to say it'll be the biggest Women's World Cup of your career, do you think?
Yeah, well, I mean, it'll certainly be the first I'm attending, so I'm looking forward to that. I mean, I'm looking forward to it, A, for just for the enjoyment sake of watching some really good football, but, you know, what the women have just said there about the progress, I mean, I think it's, you know, it's incumbent on all of us, and we talk about it, a lot of us in the media, about how much profile we're giving to women's sport. Rightly, people are asking hard questions about whether we give it enough. We have to ask ourselves those questions. There is still a really weirdly large audience out there of men who sort of somehow regard the growth of women's sport as a threat, which I just can't get my head around. I mean, if you don't want to watch it, fine, you know, go and do something else. But there is still actually a sort of active antipathy to it, which is genuinely hard to get your head around. And, you know, when you consider, I know this is ancient history, but it's still relevant history, about the FA banning women's football for half of the 20th century. I mean, you know, there's a lot to correct. You know, there's still a lot of growth to come, but it's coming. There's, you know, you're a fool if you don't think it's coming. You can see it all around. Girls, you know, in every town, village in the country are, you know, it's spreading, and interest is spreading. And this summer, particularly being on the BBC, particularly hopefully having an England team that's to be sort of got behind. You know, we've seen an England team on the roll will get the country behind it. I mean, look at the netball team, you know. Yeah, I could never believe that I'd be sitting there, you know, jumping off my sofa, screaming at the telly, watching netball, and I was. And I think, yeah, this tournament has got the potential to do the same.
Mm. And Claire, as someone that has played then at the highest level in this country, do you feel, Matt's maybe sort of a little bit alluded to it, but there are still those misconceptions about the quality of the women's game when it comes to the general public?
For sure. You see it, you know, in some of the tweets you get and some of the responses you get from some of the output. But ultimately, I think this World Cup is a fantastic opportunity for people to actually go out, watch some of the games. They're on BBC, everyone can watch, and actually form an opinion based on what you're actually seeing rather than what you think the quality is like. And you know, you have to respect people's opinions. If people don't want to watch it, as Matt said, don't watch it. That's absolutely fine. But at least give it some, you know, percentage of attention. Base your decisions on that, and then hopefully we can move on. And I think success will be pivotal in changing some of them opinions, and everyone, you know, will be wanting football to come home.
Yeah. I think also with the terrestrial TV side of things, what I would love to see, and I won't be able to see it because I'll be in France, but hopefully, you know, calling friends and family back home, I want to see people having like parties in their garden, like people did last year, that proper summer World Cup fever that also we're not going to get with Qatar. So use up your World Cup fever now, but that summer, that British summer feeling of like, you know, barbecues in the rain, whatever, but putting the football on together, watching it as a group, having it down the local pub. I really hope that lots of pubs put it on. I think, you know, if you find out that your local pub isn't going to put it on, go and tell them to put it on. There's no reason why they shouldn't. And that's what you want to see, that sort of feverish, it's coming home, because actually for the first time in, you know, however many decades, it might actually be coming home. So, you know.
Watch it. And it's going to be exciting, Molly, at the end of the day.
I think it's really important that we actually capitalise on the male allies in the women's game, because, as Matt said, there is that section of society that is very aggressively against women's football and women's sport generally. And I think it's very easy to look at that section of society, and it's quite loud, it's very in your face, it replies to the articles and it's on Twitter. But actually, there's a whole generation of men that support women's sport, and they'll be out there in France watching it, and they'll be watching it at home on TV. And I think it's really important to not give that section of society too much kind of airtime, because actually there's some amazing men that are doing a lot for the women's game. And, you know, Phil Neville, for example, you know, what he's done for the game and what he's doing for the game and the young girls out there is really important. And I think it's important that doesn't get overshadowed by that small minority.
Mm, yeah, absolutely. And Claire's pretty good at putting people down. Good story, she'll often say.
Don't worry. Cool story, I said to some guy who replied to TalkSport stuff.
That was it. That was a really good put down, like that. Okay, that is it for now. Many thanks to our guests today, Molly Hudson, Rebecca Myers, Matt Dickinson and Claire Rafferty. We'll be back on the 10th of June after England take on Scotland.
The Game is brought to you by The Times. For more information and more podcasts from The Times, head to thetimes.co.uk. Thank you.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.